as an archetypal idea exists in invisibility for the human consciousness, so absolute exists in invisibility for the human consciousness. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. And our topic this evening is rather compelling. As an archetypal idea exists in invisibility for the human consciousness, so absolute exists in invisibility for the human consciousness. Think about it. Archetypal ideas are is's, and they do not exist in absolute. Archetypal ideas are is's, and they exist in the relative, but in the very high quality of relative thinking. And here we say also, they exist in invisibility. Now, what does invisibility mean? Invisibility means we can't see it. Invisibility means you don't even know it's there. You don't even know that it has any existence. And so whenever we use the word invisibility, we are using it about something we cannot see. Now, there are phantoms and there are people that exist in many levels of consciousness. As we have discussed many times before, there are hundreds and thousands of people living in this environment, passing through you and doing their thing, totally oblivious to your existence. And you are totally oblivious to their existence. You're doing your thing, living in what?
In the now.
In the now, in the timelessness, in the spacelessness. So all time and space are here. You think, we think, for some reason or other, because it's logical, we think that there is over there and here. And this is all one. This is all one. You see, we have never really thought deeply about it from thinking of the idea that if all time and space are here, how does that work? If all time and space are here, how can we conceive of that? How can we conceive, just say, space now, that in the space of our existence, all existence exists? Now, how can we say that about ourselves, that in the space of our existence, all existence exists? You know, it's quite an interesting idea, because we'll play with that for a second, from the point of view that if I say, okay, this is good, if I say you're going to die, and so then you have the normal dying syndrome of having your entire life pass through your consciousness in an instant. In an instant, you, even a tinier instant than that, you have every experience that you have ever had in this particular lifetime pass through your experience. Now, how can that be? I mean, it takes time for that to pass through. It takes time for you to be aware of it, for you to presume it, to even be the understanding of it. You cannot have a movie screen going on without you looking here and there. Every time you see the film, every time you see the movie, you're seeing new aspects of it that you hadn't seen before. And yet it was always there. Perhaps you see the movie 100 times. Someone was writing that they had gone to see a movie, was it you, Ellen? Had to see a movie many, many times. And finally their father said, enough. You have seen it enough. But the movie was very impressive to this person. And they were finding newer and newer aspects in the movie, even though they had seen it so many times. Now, if you can find so many aspects in a movie that you've seen many times, that should give you a little inkling of what you have and are not aware of in your present existence. Now, just as an illustration, Ellen is sitting here facing me. But behind Ellen is a mirror and a plant and coats hanging on the wall, and all sorts of things. There's a whole world going on back of Ellen, and she has no idea what it is. But she does know what it is, because she is the allness. But she has not tuned into it, because if she tunes into it, then she would cease to be the allness. As it is, she has ceased to be the allness because she tuned into the world she's tuned into. She tuned into the world that, so to speak, is in front of her eyes. But Ellen will tell you, there's a chimes outside that are singing. And there's a wind, you can see it. And the breeze is blowing the branches around. And the dogs are getting upset because they see the cat walking up the stairs. And she doesn't see the cat, but she knows the dogs are upset because the cat's walking up the stairs, because that's what upsets the dogs. So she puts all these facts together. And they may not be true. It may not be the cat going up the stairs. It may be a bunny rabbit jumping up the stairs, you know. It would equally cause the dogs to have a great deal of interest there. But she knows it's the cat because she thinks it is. But she may be wrong on two counts. It may be a big bird, because they love to bark at the big blackbirds that hang up there. Really big ravens, you know, with a wingspan of maybe 3 feet almost. They are humongous. But, you see, she doesn't know. But she thinks. And so, for her, what she thinks is so. And it doesn't mean that there's really a raven there. But in her mind, she sees the raven who has been there before and who has caused the dogs to bark, and so she's aware of that. But it could be something else again. It could be some kids who had let a balloon fly away, and the balloon got caught on the top of the pole, and so the dogs are looking up there and seeing this balloon bobbing back and forth on the top of the pole, and they're thinking, oh boy, what is that, you know? And Ellen thinks it was a rabbit. She thinks it was a cat. She thinks it was the raven. She thinks it was many things. And for her, this is quite real. Now, can you see all the illusions that Ellen has made real in her mind, which quite likely are not real at all? Now, what is real? What does she pay attention to that is real? What do we pay attention to? What are these archetypal conditions of thought? She's getting closer to the archetypal conditions with that type of thought, but what are the archetypal conditions of these thoughts? What leads us to absolute awareness of these thoughts? Well, unfortunately, what leads us to absolute awareness of these thoughts is no awareness. If Ellen hears these things and is untouched by them, she doesn't need to direct her attention to them. She has made a great step on her spiritual illumination. When Ellen hears people shouting and screaming and hollering, and she hears sirens and she hears airplanes and she hears crashes and different things, and she is not mentally involved, she shuts it off and turns to the quietness within her. Then she is moving toward her spiritual path in a most magnificent way. And this is why I work with you so diligently on the idea, be untouched. Be untouched by the world around you. Because when you're untouched by the world around you, you can be aware of the world within you. And when you're aware of the world within you, then you can be aware of the world that exists far beyond even that. Because if you are allowing yourself to be touched, and you're allowing yourself to make judgments, you're allowing yourself to say it's good or bad, you're allowing yourself to be possessed by these things, because that's what happens. There's there's a bird on top of the telephone pole, there's a cat, there's a rabbit. See, you're possessed by these things because that's what you know. And we're always possessed by things that we know, and we want to be unpossessed by those things. And how do we be unpossessed by them? We don't hear them. We do not give them any attention. We do not let ourselves be possessed by their awareness. We are reaching out into a greater realm of awareness. And you know, that's not a correct word either, because we are reaching out into a greater realm of unawareness, untouchability. And when you're unaware, when you're aware, unaware, it seems like a dichotomy, like a dualism, but it's not. When you have this ability to be unaware and aware, then you are reaching into that wonderful bliss, that wonderful illumination that is right here, right on the other side of your think system. It's the think system that says, this is, and the think system that says, all is nothing. But just imagine that. Here you are. You are able to visualize your entire 300-year lifetime in a flash when your body thinks it's going through the experience of death. So you're sort of cataloging your entire life and putting it into its book, and then moving on to the next experience, which is another set of awareness. And now, what do you think you do? What do you think you do with this book, if you will call it that? What do you think you do with this information that you have cataloged as you are alert to a new dimension of yourself? What do you think you do? You let it go. Nobody's interested in it. Would you like to see my old photograph album? Well, not unless you tell me what the pictures mean. Because if you show me your old photograph album, and I don't know who's who, it's not very interesting. And even when you tell me who is who, it's not very interesting. Now, if I show me my photograph album, that's different. I have a personal interest in there. I have a personal awareness. And you see, we want to get rid of that personal awareness. And we want to get rid of that and then throw it out. I have said to you at different times, and I did not ask you to throw away your photographs. I said, don't be possessed by them. If you have them, that's fine, but don't be possessed by them. Now, we have photographs in front of the bathroom there, about three or four of them, and they're there, and they're there, and they're there, and they're there, and they're there. And then we want to refer to our Bahamian friends, and we say, oh yeah, they're on the photograph there in front of the bathroom. Yeah, that's another one you'll put on there, but don't forget. But you see, these are people that we forget about because they're not in our consciousness. They're not in our awareness. And when we forget about them, then what happens? Then that's a clean slate for us. However, if we allow ourselves to remember them, then we are as much bound up and possessed by them as we were before. Now, how do you move into the circumstances where you can put these things aside and never again have the slightest interest in them? Good question. How do you do that? Well, how do you create your world? Do you create your world in bliss? Well, what does bliss mean to you? Does bliss mean you have your nose in other people's business? The last thing in the world you do in bliss. Does bliss mean that you are having responsibility in this world? But we must have responsibility. We're human beings, and we have a responsibility to one to the other. Yes, we do. But that responsibility is not to have responsibility. And that seems, again, this is strange, you know, ludicrous. But it is true. It is true. Now, a lady called up on the phone tonight, and she asked about a treatment for her husband, I believe, or her son, and who?
Her brother.
Her brother, well, they won't get it right yet. And we said, has he ever been whole and perfect? And she says, oh, yes. And I said, well, then think of him that way. And don't ever tell anybody in the world the recitation of his illness as you did with us. But you're my practitioner. That's right. Shut up. Tell us what you want to hear. I wasn't quite that blunt with her, but tell us what you want to hear. Do you want to hear that your brother is whole and perfect? If you want to hear he's whole and perfect, then put that cause in motion. If you want to hear that he's sick, then put that cause in motion. And we will treat that he is sick and get sicker so that he will fulfill that sickness. Sounds silly and stupid, but that's what we do. That's what we do. Now, I'm taking something to the doctor. I don't care what it is. I'm taking something to the doctor. And I say, "Doctor, this thing here is dying of this, that, and the other thing." And the doctor says, "Oh my gosh, yeah, so it is. There's no medicine that can heal that. There's no remedy for that. And it is going to die. It could be your son, your husband, your mother, or your wife. It could be anything, you know. Now, it's going to die." And you say, "But doctor, I don't want it to die. I love it. I don't want it to die." "Well, why did you come in here to show me something that you didn't want to die? Now, what could you have done?" And you say, "Well, I don't know. What could I have done?" "You could have said, 'You are whole and perfect now and always. I see you whole and perfect. I see you whole. I close my eyes tight and see you whole and perfect. I look in my mind's eye and see you in experiences of wholeness and perfect. I look at you in every possible way in my consciousness and see you whole and perfect. And then come join me. Join me in seeing yourself whole and perfect. Remember when you were out at the race. Remember when you were doing this or that, some lovely athletic activity that you were whole and perfect. You were fantastic. Join with me in that thought." And that will revitalize, reverbalize your body in a beautiful, powerful, boisterous way. And it's fantastic. If, you know, what is it? Now, just remember this. You are all a bunch of idiots. You go to sport games and you say, "Go, go, 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 go. Yeah, yeah, come on, John. Do this here. Hit the ball, you know, do. You know, well, what you're doing is you are taking your vibrations and infusing them into the sportsman and encouraging him to play his very best. Now, you're not making him play better, but you're encouraging him to draw out from within himself that magic that makes him play well. Now, we think, we touched them, we gave them our enthusiasm, we gave them our vibrations. No, we told them to look within themselves for that vibration that we're throwing at them. Because until they feel that vibration within themselves, they will not feel the healing. They will not experience the healing. So this is what our enthusiasm does. It causes them to reach within themselves for that wholeness and perfection. Now, Mr. Do-nothing, ain't-nothing, ain't-no-good sort of person, you know. He says, "I am going for my spiritual illumination." And you think to yourself, of all the people going for their spiritual illumination, this guy is really ludicrous. He is really spaced out. No way is he going to do that. Well, instead of thinking and saying something like that, which is so obvious, we would say, "Hey, that's a wonderful thought. I see you spiritually illumined now." What happens when you say that? And you are moving toward your spiritual illumination. "I see you spiritually illumined now." And get out of your mind any thought that he's having trouble achieving it. Remember the criminal on the cross with Jesus? In an instant, he said, "I believe in you, Lord. I believe." And duck, he was done. Many others are like that too. As I told you about the woman who was dying of cancer, and she said, "Do I have a choice whether I live or die? The doctor said I was going to die." I said, "Yes, you have a choice. You just call the doctor in here and tell him to say to your family and friends that it was a misdiagnosis and you're whole and perfect." And she did that. That takes a lot of guts. That takes a lot of guts, because what if it didn't work and you died? And they'd think you're kind of silly, wouldn't they? But who cares? And I told her, "Who cares? And what difference does it make?" And so she called the doctor in. He said, "Okay, silly lady." But the whole family got behind her and encouraged her to draw forth the purity, the goodness, the genius, the wholeness that was in her. And she did it. Now, those are just illustrations of how we move into our inner bliss. But that's not going to keep us there. We have to build our awareness or our inner bliss with the strength of conviction that we really are that. And it's not something that is just a momentary thing, something that just made us happy for a minute. It's our reality. Are you ready for that? I sure think that'd be a great idea. So, no time can you ever say, I'm sorry for myself. No time can you ever say, they're not treating me right. No time can you ever say, it's tough. It is tough, you know. No time can you ever say that. Because if you say that, you're putting yourself back on the first base. And you're nowhere. You want a home run. And the only way to get a home run is to divert everyone's attention. And whoop, you run on in. and the ball is up in the air. And then you say, ball, stay there. And so you can run around the bases. You can make a couple home runs. Because the ball isn't coming down. They can't catch it. And they can't throw it and tag you out. But you see, this is what we are in charge of. We want to keep that ball in the air. So we can make the home run. So that we can accomplish that which we wish to accomplish. As an archetypal idea exists in invisibility, see, that ball stays in the air by the invisibility of our thought. For the human consciousness, so does absolute live as the archetypal thought in invisibility. And that's nice because you can't see it. And nobody else can see it. Nobody else can say it won't work because they can't see it. But you know it in your innermost. And you stand by it. Now, the little children who have these unseen friends, they're not unseen to the little children. But they're unseen to us because we are so blind, we will not open our eyes to all of the transmission of people, consciousness, ideas going on all around us. All around us. And we tell the little children, don't think that way. People will think you're crazy. Well, let them think that. But watch those children. They will not be insane. They will not be mentally incompetent. They will be the most brilliant, beautiful, illuminated people on the face of the earth. And quite likely, those are the ones who are so illuminated. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Well, you all have a very lovely evening. Contemplate these ideas as you like, and give them strength and power in your experience, and watch the miracle of their reality taking place for you. Even got the bell on that one. I love you, I love you, I love you.